Hello listeners and welcome to the 5th Winter Olympics special. Scottish skier Charlie Guest battled back from a near career-ending injury in November 2014, where she broke 4 vertebrae in a training crash. She'd never been injured before and it was a totally alien feeling for her, but amazingly she was back on snow after just 6 weeks. The after effects of that crash have stayed with her, but this past summer was one of Charlie's best ever, and the injury has taken a back seat to everything else. In a matter of days, she'll be making her Olympic debut in Pyeongchang, completing one of the major goals she set herself as a skiing athlete. This interview was recorded back in December, before Charlie found out about her Olympic qualification, but in this eye-opening conversation, she tells us about recovering from that injury, how she fell in love with skiing, what led to her decision to become a full-time athlete, and she also tells us about convincing the doubters that she is determined to one day be the best in her sport. We hope you enjoy. Charlie, thanks so much for joining us for this Winter Olympics special. How are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much. And obviously the Winter Olympics are very fast approaching right now. Is the excitement starting to build?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, the more I hear about it, the more I'm getting excited about it. But the thing is, we've got so many different competitions on at the moment. We've got World Cups, we've got European Cups and FIS races, all in the run-up to the Games. So I've probably got another 20 individual races between now and the Olympics, so I've got a lot to focus on in the meantime.
And how has preparation kind of been for you in terms of results and training?
This summer has honestly been one of the best summers that I've ever had in terms of pre-season training. No injuries, no setbacks or anything like that. My body's been in great shape, so I've really been able to keep pushing on every single day, you know, in the gym, sort of dry land. I've been hitting numbers that I've never come near before, and then skiing wise I've been able to push on with both slalom and giant slalom, so across 2 disciplines, which is something I've struggled with over the last 3 years. So to be able to do that and fit in a really full schedule has been a massive positive for me to take into the season. Skiing wise everything's going really well and I've been putting in really fast times, so and the races have started off really well, so happy with it.
So with kind of the hectic nature of your competitive schedule, does that kind of help you, because you've always got something to focus on that's upcoming quite quickly, you don't have time to kind of dwell?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I always say to people, is that we do have more competitions per week than maybe is expected, but when you've got say 3 World Cups in a week, then you've got no time to, you know, dwell on things going badly, so you can you can tick it off, you've learned from it, and immediately you've got the chance to go straight into another one and change your mistakes and give it another bash. So exactly, you don't have time to be negative. And the same sort of thing, once you find yourself on form, you know, you've got competitions coming again and again, so when you do find form, it's great because you can keep going into the next race and you know that you're on top form and ready to win.
Yeah, so it's a real momentum builder.
Yeah, exactly.
And of course, you're from Scotland, as I suppose many people can tell from your accent. How much time do you get to spend there versus time you've got to spend abroad training on snow, for example?
So I'd say I definitely don't spend that much time back home anymore. We're based out in Austria for the winter, and we, you know, we base ourselves with a sort of development, well, an academy out there, you know, developing athletes for the national team. And so we have a room where we leave our things, which is pretty handy when we're traveling around Europe and, you know, Scandinavia all the time. But in the summer, I do all of my dry land training, or the bulk of my dry land training, back home, and more specifically in Dundee, with the Tayside and Fife Institute of Sport. And there they cover my strength, conditioning, nutrition, physiology and everything. And so that's sort of 2 to 4 week blocks that I'm there, and I'd say it's maybe 12 weeks over the course of the summer in total that I'm at home.
Mm-hmm. And with the regards to the travelling, I know it kind of differs from sports person to sports person, but is getting used to travelling something that's kind of a key component of your sport? Because some people can handle being away from home a lot easier than other people can.
Yeah, it's a massive thing. And I was curious, it was something that I learned from a really young age. I think I was 11 years old when I first started going abroad, you know, for 3 week blocks to go and train. And you really, you learn pretty fast how to work in airport, how to, you know, work the system, your baggage and all that kind of thing. But at the moment, you know, we do a lot of driving around as well. So say we're based in Austria and we have a race in France, we'll drive there. You know, that can take 9-10 hours. Recently, we just drove from a place, Levi in Finland, which is up in the Arctic Circle, and drove down to Sweden, and that was a 16-hour drive. So you learn sort of techniques of how to look after your body through that time. You prepare food, for example. We're always wearing, like, compression tights. You know, what's your comfy clothes. So you get pretty quickly into the swing of things with how to make these long drives and things comfortable.
Oh, yeah, it just becomes routine, I suppose, once you've done it.
Yeah,
time
exactly.
Again.
And, you know, they're all built into this. Well, as much as we can plan ahead, you know, we build these travel days into schedules so that you can plan days off around about them so that you have time to sort of limber up after you've been stuck in a car for, you know, 10 hours or something.
Yeah. Now, of course, any Olympic athlete has had to work extremely hard to get to where they are, but your own story is really quite something. And we're going back to November 2014 now, so just over 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And you suffered a near career-ending injury when you crashed and broke 4 vertebrae while training, which sounds painful just reading that. Just take us through what happened on that day.
Yeah, so it was just a normal training day. I was in this place, Sundsvall, in Sweden, which is like right near the Norwegian border. And it was a totally normal day. I went up, course inspected, warmed up as normal, and just in the first run, I made a mistake. Which, you know, I make this particular mistake quite often, and it's nothing bad. But I crashed and I went off the side of the piste and hit a boulder in the forest and landed just straight on my back. You know, I was obviously winded at the time, and I think I was screaming pretty hard. My coach came down and was like, "Oh God, you okay? Your helmet, yeah, okay, your face is fine, your head's fine." He was like, "You're wearing your back protector." I'm like, "Yeah, I've got it on." Because previously I actually hadn't been wearing a back protector in technical events, so it was a giant fall day, and this was only the third time I'd worn it. So thanks to my coach being pretty persistent with the back protector scenario, I was wearing it that day, and it probably saved me from having much more severe injuries. But yeah, then after that, I got, you know, sledged down the hill on, you know, on like the, well, they call them blood wagons, not a very nice name, but had a huge sort of 200 kilometer trip to hospital in the ambulance because the weather was too bad for the helicopter to come in. And yeah, where I found out that I'd broken 4 vertebrae with 11 weeks until my first world championship.
How quickly did it kind of dawn on you that you'd done some real serious damage?
When I first crashed, I knew it was sore, and I remember saying to my coach, like, "I'm not going to be training tomorrow." And so he was like, "Yeah, no, I totally understand, obviously." And in the ambulance, they were thinking, "Okay, yeah, you've probably got some broken ribs." So I was like, "Okay, all right, I can deal with that." So it was in the hospital after, you know, MRIs and X-rays and things that they came through, and they were like, "Yeah, you've fractured 4 vertebrae." So that was, I just burst into tears at that point.
Yeah. So. And you mentioned there the timing. I mean, so soon to such an important competition for you.
Yeah.
How on earth do you take that news in that you're going to be out for that length of time?
For me, that was quite hard to take. I'd never been injured before, so, you know, it was a totally, like, alien feeling to me. But yeah, my coach was there, and he was saying, "Well, you know, that you've got to take it." They were quoting me that it was something like 12 weeks until I'd be able to start going skiing again in the hospital, and I was like, right, okay. But then I got a call from a doctor at the Scottish Institute of Sport, and he'd just had a cyclist that had a similar injury. She'd broken her back in the February, and she was in the Commonwealth Games in the summer. So he was like, look, it's possible, you know, we with the right sort of treatments or, you know, management, you could potentially make world champs. So that gave me quite a lot of hope. And so when I got back, I was straight in to see the doctors and physios and everything at the Institute. I was actually back on snow in 6 weeks.
That's a truly remarkable timescale to come back so quickly from something so serious.
Yeah. I mean, when I went back skiing, I had to start off, you know, with the real basics, sort of snow plowing, really not going fast and being super protective over what was going on. I mean, down the line, I have had, you know, I'm still feeling the effects from the injury, but and that's something that's probably going to be with me for the rest of my life. I think it's just the nature of the sport combined with injury and the sort of the way that the impact of that crash has affected my muscles through my hips and into my back. So
yeah.
That's something that's is quite complex and it's difficult to manage, but we're managing to do that.
Yeah, so is that mainly sort of aches and pains and things like that?
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like a grandma when I wake up in the morning and all that kind of thing. But, you know, as I say, like this summer it's been one of the best that I've ever had, and it's really taken a back seat, you know, for the first time in sort of 2.5-3 years. I've really been able to forget about it.
Yeah. Well, that kind of leads into my next question, because obviously there's the physical damage, but I always wonder about the mental side of things with something like that. Do you, once you get back, is there almost some subconscious feeling in your brain that you kind of worry that something like that might happen again, and you kind of hold back a little bit in your performances?
I'd say at the beginning, I ski mainly slalom and giant slalom. Slalom, I had absolutely no problem skiing it, so the speeds are slower in it, and it's a much more technical discipline. But then giant slalom, where the speeds are higher, I really did struggle to begin with to get back into that. I actually had like quite a few complications with the sort of positions I needed to get into with how the muscles in my back were reacting. So I actually had to, I stopped skiing giant slalom for the best part of 2 years. And this year I've really only started again. But actually I just had races back in the same place in Sweden that I broke it. And the first run that I went past, I was really holding back. And I was like, okay, just stay on your outside ski, stay on your outside ski. Because last time I didn't and I ended up in the forest, I was like, all right, just stay on it and you'll be fine. And after that first run past the same place again, it was totally fine. And I had two races there the following weekend and it all went really well. And I'd say it's completely behind me now. But yeah, in the beginning there were some reservations.
Yeah, but I suppose as time has gone on, you've built up that bravery again.
Yeah, exactly. And I've had other things since then, you know, broken hands or something else. So, you know, there's no time to really keep thinking about what went on. I mean, you know, I've crashed so many times in my career and only that time have I really had a big problem. So,
Yeah. And now skiing has always been an obsession of yours, and I believe you had your first taste of it at the age of just 3. Is that love affair with the sport effectively what has helped you to battle back and, you know, drive forwards for what you actually want?
Yeah, I'd definitely say that's a massive part of it. You know, when I was younger, I probably wasn't so into skiing as I am now. And I think, you know, I've left school and I've realised that I'm doing something that I really love doing. And it doesn't feel like a job to me. You know, I'm doing an awful lot of training and I sacrifice a lot of things for it. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you're standing on the podium, having just nailed a run, it's the best feeling ever. And I don't think there's many people, there's a lot of people out there that are doing things that, you know, they're getting up in the morning and they're thinking, oh no, I don't want to go to work, but I'm getting up and I'm like, right, I need to warm up, I'm on the mountain, and you don't think about it, and before you know it, it's the end of the day. And also, you know, the travelling around, it's just a lifestyle that I really love. And when I crashed and had these injuries, you know, I never questioned it once that I wouldn't be back doing what I wanted to do. You know, it was straight back home, straight into the gym, and, you know, getting back on skis as soon as possible.
Was that then kind of the hook for you that really grabbed you into skiing, the fact that it's not a regular job and you can get those amazing moments on podiums and things like that?
yeah, well, that's certainly part of it. You know, when I was younger, it was something we did as a family. You know, my dad, he ski raced when he was younger. All of my siblings have been on, you know, national teams with it. So it's something that as a family we just do, and that's what it is. Like, ski racing is such a huge part of it. And then I think it probably wasn't until I was around 17 I really appreciated what I was doing. And at that point, obviously, you're making your choices. You know, am I going to go to university? I'm like, what am I going to do? And yeah, I applied for university, but it was quite a half-hearted affair. And I always knew that, yeah, I'm going to give ski racing my best shot. And I had a place to go to university at Aberdeen, and I remember deferring it, saying, okay, I can give full-time ski racing 1 year. And my results that year were better than I could have ever anticipated. And so I was like, right, okay, we'll do another year. And then after that second year, it was like, okay, this is what I'm doing for the rest of my life. I don't want to go to uni. Like, this is what I'm doing for the next 10 years at least. So,
and was that easy to convince family and friends that kind of skiing was for you rather than, say, university?
Actually, that's quite a good question. So my parents, obviously, they are totally behind me in what I'm doing. But I think because ski racing is a sport that it's not very high profile in Britain, you know, people find it quite hard to understand. You know, a lot of people say to me, oh, so you're doing a season, you're out in Stratford. I'm like, no, that's not what I'm doing. I'm racing. I'm hoping to be in Olympic Games. I want to be world champion. I want to be number one in the world. And I don't know. I think some people just don't really think it's real. And so I remember speaking to an aunt of mine, and she was like, so Charlotte, you know, when are you going to go to university? Like, when is all this nonsense going to end, kind of thing? And I thought, are you joking? Like, this is my career. This is what I'm going to do the rest of my life. It's going to stop when, you know, I've achieved number one in the world. I've won Olympic medals and all that kind of thing. So it was difficult for a time, you know, making people realize that it's a real career opportunity, and it's something that, you know, I enjoy, not only enjoy doing, but will do. And I believe that I'm going to succeed at everything. So that's where I'm at with that.
Yeah. And I suppose with that belief of, you know, of wanting to be the best at your sport, I suppose something along the lines of proving those people wrong must come into the equation as well for you.
Oh, massively. I mean, I try not to think about it. It's one of those things that, you know, you speak with a psychologist about, and it's not always the best thing to be trying to prove a point to someone, because I think that puts unnecessary pressure on yourself, all that kind of thing. But definitely when you get a great result or you're standing up there on the podium, you're thinking, okay, the sacrifices were completely worth it. I've not been an idiot. I've not given up other opportunities to be here. You know, this is totally worth it. And all those people, there you go. A British person can stand up here. British, and, you know, with Dave Riding now doing so well on the men's side, it's like British people can be on World Cup podiums and alpine skiing. And yeah, it's a great feeling when you can prove people wrong.
Oh, yeah. And shifting back to the Olympics themselves, and kind of on that note as well, do you see public opinion kind of changing and shifting towards the Winter Olympics a little bit more because of the success of someone like Dave Riding, or, you know, what Katie Ormerod is doing now, for example, things like that?
Yeah, no, it's huge. And I'd say actually since the London Games, actually, there's been a completely different attitude to sport, I'd say, in the UK from the general public. And that's been really awesome as an athlete. And obviously, in winter sports, we've got, you know, Ski Sunday, and we've had, like, the jump. And it's amazing how much those sort of programs have got people interested in winter sports and all that kind of thing. But yeah, definitely in the March Olympics, people are much more interested in skiing and more willing to kind of, I guess, give it a go. And I think as soon as we do have medal potentials, you know, like Jenny Jones in Sochi, then people really believe that Brits have a chance, and they think, oh, that looks really cool. Like, for kids and things, they're great role models, and hopefully we can get more people into skiing and willing to give it a shot. And yeah, we never know where we're going to end up. Yeah.
And it must be great to be part of that group that has the chance, effectively, to really pave the way for the first time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still looking up to Dave Riding as, you know, my role model, and seeing him achieving what he is through complete hard work is the most inspiring thing. And so for me, the message I always try and pass on to people is that, you know, you're responsible for your own dreams. And if you want to be standing on an Olympic podium or a World Cup podium, that you're going to have to do all the work. You know, people can guide you, but at the end of the day, you're the one that's going to be doing all the days in the gym, all the bike rides, all the hard bits to get you there. So, yeah, to be part of a group that is now getting support and has the potential to get onto a World Cup podium and Olympic podium is really exciting.
Oh, absolutely. And if everything goes right for you and you manage to get out to South Korea, what do you think you're looking forward to the most about that experience?
Well, I always think, you know, being part of Team GB is going to be an insanely proud moment. Obviously, the summer team, they're so successful, and the winter team, we're going into the games hopefully with the strongest team that we've ever had. So that's going to be play a massive part in it. And also, I'm really looking, we've got a new Olympic event this year for ski racing, and it's a team event. And so we've got two girls and two boys on the team, and it's sort of head-to-head against other nations. And I did it at World Champs back in 2015, and honestly, it was one of the most adrenaline-filled experiences of my life. It's kind of like a relay, I guess. I think being part of that team, you know, if I get selected, will be amazing. Obviously, my own individual events as well, and hopefully the giant slalom, will be massive. But you know, I'll try to treat that like a normal race, like any other race I do. The team event, I think, will be something special.
Oh, absolutely. And on that note, I suppose we'd better wrap up. And I just want to thank you again for spending some time chatting with us, Charlie. And I hope everything goes well for the races that you have coming up. And that you enjoy the experience as well when it comes your way.
Yeah, I will do. And thank you so much for having me and all the support and everything.
A big thanks again to Charlie for coming onto the show, and we were delighted when we heard that she had made it to the Games. We will be keeping our fingers crossed for her come competition time, and we're sure she and everyone else will be immensely proud when she represents her country. Feedback, of course, is very welcome on this podcast, as always, and you can come and follow us on social media. All of our pages, that's Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, they are all SportSpielPod. Join us tomorrow for more as we release the 6th of our Winter Olympics episodes, where we are joined by the associate senior writer of the Hockey News and the host of the Hockey News podcast, Matt Larkin, to delve into the potential consequences for the National Hockey League after they decided not to allow their players attend the Pyeongchang Games.